Blog Talk Radio.
Conservative perspective here. My name is Bostic, James Bostic. It's good to be with you. Man, Tom Jones, what a set of pipes, God. I hope everybody had a terrific day today. It's nice to be here with you. We do it live Tuesdays and Thursdays when I'm in the mood, and here lately I've been kind of slacking a little bit. But anyway, we do it live Tuesdays and Thursdays, 7 p.m. Tuesdays we do it 7 to 9, 7 to 8:30, 7 to 8:45, 7 to 8:36. It just depends. And then 7 to 8 on Thursday with El Guapo, the handsome one himself, Mark Hoffman, and Patriot Nation Radio Live. And we have a recorded version of the show that goes out Sundays, 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and replayed throughout the week on the Mojo 50 Radio Network, mojo50.com. And if you're not listening, well, you probably should be, because it is some of the best in libertarian and conservative talk radio that you're going to find out there anywhere. Period. Full stop. End of story. Well, that's all we've got for this evening. I hope you got... Man, did you guys listen to... I'm trying something different tonight. So I changed switches on the microphone. And I got a terrific mic. It's an old one. I've had it a long time. It's made by Blue, B-L-U-E, and they make a terrific line of cost-effective microphones for your bargain basement podcaster like myself. Quality stuff, good price, and I've had this one I've had this one for about 10 years, maybe more. A few years back, I got another one, a Black Ice microphone. And I just like them. They're really good. Now your microphone snobs like Benford, who has, you know, like a $1,500 Elector Voice 9000 that, you know, can make him sound like James Earl Jones when he pushes the right button. So, yeah, he does. This is the kind of stuff he carries around like in his glove box, or you might find one underneath the couch or something at his place. They're nice if you don't have anything else. But they really are good mics. And what I'm doing tonight is I changed the switches. I was looking. I'm just not exactly sure about the sound. I listened to some of this stuff in playback, and it may be that I got to go with the $1,500 Elector Voice 9000 mic so I can sound like James Earl too. But we're working on it, and if it sounds good, okay, great. If not, I'm sorry. I'll listen to it on playback, and we'll work on tuning it. I hope you guys had a really good day today, because I'll tell you what I did. I had a slam bang day, man. The weather was really nice for the first time in about 3 or 4 or 5, 6, 8 days. It's been kind of chilly and overcast and rainy, and it's just not mid-May weather that's typical in West Virginia, although we've been known to have a cold snap, and that's not what I was looking for. Well, it was a great day today, and the thing about what I do in my daytime gig, you guys know I work in the school system, and the entire 17 years that I've been in there, wow, 17 years, the entire time I've been in there, there is a time at the end of the school year, go back, okay, go back to high school, beauty school dropout. No, but go back and think about May or a really, really nice, mild, you know, last 2 weeks of April moving into May. It's beautiful outside. You're stuck in class, man. And you're looking out that window, wishing you were anywhere other than Miss Mankin's English class, for the love of God, or Dix Manning's algebra class. No, I can't say that about Coach Manning. You know, he was a good man. He was a wrestling coach at my high school. I'm not good at math at all, okay? And algebra was my zenith. And I protested because, by God, letters and numbers aren't supposed to mix. That's why you have an alphabet. That's why you got a number line. Anyway, I digress. He gave me, I sucked at it, but I didn't cause any problems in his class, and I acted about like a halfway had some sense. He gave me my gentleman C. I graciously accepted and wished him a happy summer vacation and look forward to seeing him again in the fall, but not in class, maybe in the lunchroom, maybe in the gym or something. So, you remember that feeling? You didn't want to be there. I mean, you were full, basically. Okay? There was nothing more they were going to put in your head. You'd reached your saturation point. And with the guys that I deal with, and they are some awesome, they're some awesome kids, the guys that I deal with, they get full a little earlier than your regular kid. And I'm not counting senioritis, because those guys start laying down in February. They start laying down in February, and you can't already get them to do anything without the use of a sharp stick or a cattle prod or something. But the other kids, the rank and file, not your elite seniors, but you know, they're done. So today was a beautiful day, and there are some other projects that have been going on in these children's inclusion classes. And those are the regular ed classes that they go to. Horticulture, aquaculture, we've got kids in that. In the old timey days, they called it home ec. Okay, but doing that, doing stuff, just like regular kids. But it's usually at this time of year that I'll take those regular ed teachers aside and I'll explain to them what's going on. And they're really cool about it. They, the regular ed teachers who work with my special ed kids in the high school that I work at are really, really great. And they're really, really understanding of our children. And Miss Rudy, they're getting a little full, and I'm not exactly sure how much more you can do with them, but I can take them outside and I give them some sunshine and give them some fresh air. We can play out there, and they can walk around the track on the football field. And I think in the long run, that'll probably help you in terms of classroom management, if you know what I mean. And they go, yes, Mr. James, that's an excellent idea. Willie, Sonny, go with Mr. James. You guys are going to go outside. And that's where we go, and it's a great time. And they romp, and they play, and they breathe, and they're not wearing masks. As a matter of fact, Mr. James catches them wearing a mask. He reams them out. He fusses at them. I'll be damned if I'm going to have these kids living in fear. They're safe. They're healthy. So I take them up on the football field where nobody can see. Nobody cares. And we have at it. Took my bocce set out. I got a brand new bocce set a few weeks back. We took it out. They had just, coincidentally, just mowed the football field. So it was in pretty good shape. It was fairly well-groomed. And I took the kids out. We spent an hour and a half playing bocce. Somebody would line up to play the winners. We were like a bunch of old Italian guys out there yelling and hollering, kibitzing on everybody's play. And we had a ball. By God, I can't believe they pay me for this. And that's the honest to God truth. So it was a great day for me, and I guess that's really all I got to say about that. And I hope you had a good day, too. Tomorrow's going to be even prettier, and I think we're going to move into the short pants mode of the school year, and I'm looking forward to that. Of course, it's going to look like I spent, you know, my summer on a submarine. But good to be here with you. There's a lot of stuff. We're going to go ahead and do an update first. I guess that's the first thing we'll do. With Maricopa County, as you know, for the last couple of weeks, they've been, well, even longer than that, once they decided to do the audit in Maricopa County, Arizona, former beat of Sheriff Joe Arpaio, yeah, he was in Maricopa. Anyway, the entrenched Democrat election officials in Maricopa County have been fighting this damn thing tooth and nail from the get-go. And what we've been doing here, Dr. Kelly Ward, who is chairman of the Arizona Republican Party, and she's kind of like the liaison in terms of what's going on with the audit, and we're going to go ahead and bring her up. Let's see, Maricopa County. That was Maricopa. Okay, that's going to be under the M's for Arizona. Mary Jane Boogie, cool. We'll have to play that later. Okay, Maricopa update 518. Here we go. Dr. Kelly Ward, fresh stuff. And it's taking another turn, guys. Check this out.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to America's Audit Update from the Republican Party of Arizona. I am your chairwoman, Dr. Kelly Ward. At my last update, it was clear that tensions were growing as the Maricopa County Board of Supervisors, together with the Maricopa County Recorder, Stephen Richer, were resisting the request of the Arizona Senate to meet at 1 o'clock tomorrow to discuss irregularities and omissions found during the audit process. The request was a simple one. Now, we found some serious problems. We need some serious answers, so let's discuss them in a constructive manner. Senate President Karen Pham was very professional. Well, that hit a nerve that has the Maricopa Board of Supervisors Chairman Jack Sellers and Recorder Stephen Richer launching an all-out war against the audit, against the Arizona Senate, and even against former President Donald J. Trump. In a matter of days, their names are now in every news outlet in America as they do the Democrats' bidding in trying to undermine and stop the audit. Is it just a matter of Sellers and Richards objecting to the Arizona Senate's request, or is it something much deeper? Well, let's look at a little history here because it's important. Let's be clear that the Maricopa County Board of Supervisors and their attorneys have fought from day one any attempt by anyone, including me on behalf of the Arizona Republican Party, to review, examine, test, or even question any portion of the results of the 2020 election process. Long before they started fighting the Arizona Senate, they characterized any attempt by Arizona voters to audit or hand count the ballots as fraudulent, irresponsible, and illegal. They said they've conducted their own audit and that nothing more is required. That is an outright lie. They fought hard against the Arizona Senate subpoenas requesting access to the ballots and the voting equipment. Under threat of arrest for ignoring the Senate subpoena, they asked for protection from the Arizona courts. Well, guess what? The courts sided with the Arizona Senate and its constitutional right and responsibility to review elections, the results, the processes, and everything in between. Even then, these elected officials fought back, and they refused to let Arizona election offices be used for the audit that you couldn't go to the Maricopa County Tabulation Center. That resulted in the transport of ballots and equipment to the Veterans Memorial Coliseum. The response from the Board of Supervisors and the people at Maricopa County: attack the Senate as though they were jeopardizing ballot security as they were forced to move the ballots to another secure site, which they did with heavy security. What exactly is going on here? Are these just elected officials whose primary interest is voter integrity and election transparency, or are they typical politicians who are doing everything to protect their backside while keeping the voters in the dark? No doubt here, it's the latter. Sellers and Richer have shirked their responsibilities to the voters that elected them. They aren't interested in working with the Arizona State Senate in any way that is constructive. We've seen it before when good people find themselves with power entrusted to them by the voters. They forget their time in office is temporary. They forget that they serve at the pleasure of the voters. They forget that their sole responsibility is to represent their constituents. Sound familiar? They view any attempt by the voters, by we the people, or by their duly elected representatives to look into this as a sham and interference into how they run their offices. How dare anyone question their work or their motives, let alone the Arizona Senate or Arizona courts? Their job is not to attack us, but to listen to us. But they certainly are not hearing us or our concerns. And that's why this audit must continue, why it must be completed. We need answers to real questions that, for some reason, some of our elected officials are hesitant to provide, or even worse, to even entertain. That's what America's audit is all about, answers to our questions. The pace of developments is going to be moving rapidly today, and of course, we will keep you updated as events unfold. If you want to tune in to the Board of Supervisors Dog and Pony Show today at 1 p.m. Arizona time, you can find links and info on how to do that on my social sites at Kelly Ward AZ, Kelly with an I. Thanks for tuning in. Don't forget, share this video and spread the word. Of course, if you can help us with a donation so that we can keep the pressure on, use the link below. I know I'll see you again soon, right here, as we stand strong together to keep America great.
Thank you very much, Dr. Ward. Excuse me. There are a couple of different audits going on across the country. There's another one, I think, in Rhode Island, maybe. And you know, to be such to me, on the face of circumstantial and inferential and anecdotal evidence, the question of whether or not this election was rigged and stolen is a slam dunk. And it is for you too. All right. You know this. I know this. Everybody I talk to, we all know this. All right. Not all of us are Mensa candidates either. But it's obvious. But with this judicial firewall of judges and lawyers and you know, they set up, you know, they just decide they don't want to hear it. If a judge says, you know, I don't want to hear this, that's it. And, you know, good luck finding a judge that will. You might not. And then when it goes above that judge, maybe the other judge doesn't want to hear it. Or they remand it back to the original court and he says, nah, we already did this. Eh. And that's it. That's it. Now, I suppose from a court case, docket record number, you know, it's indicative of the fact that it never happened. We can look to these things and say, well, okay, if there was this widespread rigged voter election fraud cheating, where's all the court cases about it? Well, obviously there aren't any court cases. All right, so you get my meaning. So we have this cascade, this preponderance of like I said, anecdotal, inferential, you know, and circumstantial evidence that we know what we know. We know what we know. And just like in the Declaration, we hold these truths to be self-evident. That basically corrupt and crooked-ass Democrats invested in power and ideology even at the sake of their nation. These people would gladly sacrifice America, Americans, the American way of life at the altar of their ideology if they thought that it would bring them power in perpetuity. They're trying right now. Look around you. So I guess really the question that I'm talking about here is, since, you know, they've rigged the courts and the judges have set this thing up and slanted the table thus that if there are no court cases and there are no charges filed, and everything's been dropped or won't be heard, then there's no evidence. Therefore, no electioneering ever, no election fraud ever happened, no cheating ever happened, and that's that. So a little spark in Maricopa County, another one in Windham, I'm pretty sure it's Rhode Island, or Connecticut maybe. Yankee State. Sorry, Gary, don't get excited. Anyway, what I think we will be able to take away, these truths that we hold to be self-evident are indeed self-evident. What we're going to see in Maricopa County, excuse me, I think is going to be in large measure a good-looking cross-section of what happened in places like, you know, in counties like Maricopa all over the country, in Fulton County in Georgia, in Atlanta, you know, everywhere, Detroit, Chicago, every one of these crooked, corrupt Democrat enclaves where this kind of stuff can happen, and plus these shaky laws that were just ramrodded into place right before the election to set all this in motion. We know this. We've seen the videos. I don't know if it's called Fulton County Stadium these days, but wherever they counted in Atlanta and they ran that scam. I mean, this stuff, we've heard all the stories. We know it all. What happens? What happens? Well, if the bad actors and the instigators of every other shameful, treasonous example of this kind of stuff, the Russian collusion thing, all these things, if all these people, if Hillary Clinton, if Nancy Pelosi, if Chuck Schumer, if what's that turtle-looking son of a, Mitch McConnell, if nothing's going to happen to these guys, and they are crooks, active crooks. Hell, Joe Biden is in the White House, and his crookedness is open-sourced and researched. What the hell's going to happen here? Oh, these people are dauntless. They're intrepid. I understand what they're doing, and I know why they have to do it the way they do, and I salute them, and I'm rooting for them all the way, because every time, even if nothing happens, it stiffens this conviction in the court of public opinion, and that may be much worse. I'm not dead air. I'm just thinking about if I understand what I just said. So you get the idea. We cannot look to the courts to convict Hillary and Bill Clinton. Likewise, we cannot look to the courts clearly to convict Hunter or Joe Biden of anything, or the crooked deals of Mitch McConnell and his wife, Elizabeth Chao. So, they're not going to go to jail. And I can remember Gary and I talking about for a long time, last couple of years that we've talked, and it's been kind of a running, well, not lately, but it's been kind of a running theme in our conversations. how he and I both want to see, and I think a lot of people do, that Godfather moment where all these people are busted. You know, in The Godfather there, when Don Corleone dies, when Vito dies, the old man goes, everybody's at the funeral hall. Everybody's at the funeral. Then they're at the cemetery, and they're doing the funeral mass, and Michael's there, and Fredo's there, and the whole family's there. Everybody's got an alibi because they're at the old man's funeral. While the Corleone family lays to rest the patriarch, the Corleone organization settles the account on all the different Corleone enemies. And they can't do anything to Michael because he was at his dad's funeral. We don't know what happened, but all these guys that headed in for the Corleones suddenly got whacked. You know, just one day, pow, 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 they're all gone. And I so want to see that from a law enforcement perspective, instead of pow, 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 click, 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 click of the handcuffs. And then throw an overcoat over that thing and walk them out. Walk them out to the media. Walk them out to the cameras. But that's not going to happen. I don't see that happening. I hope for it. It's a great scene in my head, you know, like they do it on the 4th of July, or they do it on a State of the Union address, or, you know, some significant American holiday. But no, I'm just kidding myself. It's not going to go. It's not going to go like that. I have always bought in to the concept, to the doctrine, establishing the root of your political control, your political superiority, your ideological superiority. And make no mistakes, guys, conservatism, and I don't care what they say, is an infinitely superior political ideology to what we see from the Democrats and the Marxist progressive left. There's no other way around. There's no other way around. It is superior. The ideology is superior because it's rooted in the individual. It is rooted in our Constitution. So you establish, and it's very simple, you establish this political superiority, this ideological superiority, this conservative superiority, this constitutional Judeo-Christian superiority on a local level. County commissions, city councils, mayors, boards of education. These people, you don't think about it happening in Hooterville. You don't think about it happening in Bug Tussle. But those same cats that are in Washington, D.C., those same types that are running Antifa, that are on the staffs of people like the Squad, AOC, and Ariana, she's the bald one, right? Okay, you know, Ariana Presley and Ocasio-Cortez and Tlaib, the almost bald one. They're also running mayor's offices. Okay? They're also in positions over employees in boards of education, county and state. They're in city, you know, they're on city councils. They're committed. All right? Now, I know what it sounds like. But it's been easy for him in a way, don't you think? Everything's in their corner. They've got Hollywood. They've got the news print. They have television. They have digital media. They have our colleges. And they're working like hell to infiltrate and infect our elementary and junior high schools and high schools. Don't tell me I don't know what I'm talking about. Now watch. Now where I live, we're fundamentally fortunate in that the moral and ideological integrity of the Board of Education and the people who are there is pretty solid. They're dedicated to the children and doing what's right. And we're just one county in a 55 county state. And I don't know about what the progressive metrics are in other counties of our state, but I'll watch it here. And we're in the yellow, to be honest with you. And we could use the retightening, and it's going to happen, but it can't happen unless you're going to board meetings or at the very minimum, you know, reading the minutes, which are available to anyone. And for some of you more responsible educators out there that may be listening to me, number one, thank you very much for listening. Number two, maybe we need to check these minutes, and if there are policies that are planned on being implemented that aren't what they ought to be, then we need to start going to meetings and we need to start speaking up and voicing our opinion. You know, the unions, okay, that's great. Okay, yeah, fine, sure, union. Look for the union label or whatever that was they used to sing. A committed group of adults can organize themselves and don't need a union. And a corrupt one at that. Do you think a group of teachers in a county, one county, and those counties' teachers and teachers' aides and service personnel and transportation employees, do you think if those people weren't united with a plan to see to the needs of the education of these children in a responsible manner, to produce good citizens, to teach them how to think as opposed to what to think? You don't need a union. That's bullshit. I guarantee you, every employee of a school system who were united with a sense of purpose and they wanted to see a policy changed or they wanted to see a policy implemented, I guarantee you that board will go along with it. And you organize parents together and get these people cooperating, you don't need a union. All you need is responsible, dedicated leadership and cooperation between those groups within that county. You prove me wrong. You can't. Easier said than done. No argument. But that doesn't mean it can't be done. It was a lot easier to talk about going to the moon than doing it, but we did. And why the hell aren't we back there? If I got at this age, I thought there would be like a star base somewhere out there. Jesus. Bottom of the hour. I think we're going to take, actually a little long, isn't it? Take a little break. Let me find something to play here. And we will be back with more of ACP at some point after this brief musical interlude. Ah, hell. That's a little too long. We'll start with this.
Little higher.
And we're back. Hey, everybody. James Bostic here, Conservative Perspective on Patriot Nation Radio here at blogtalkradio.com. We do it live twice a week, Tuesdays and Thursdays for the time being, when I'm in that mood. 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We have a recorded version as well that goes out on Mojo 50 Radio Network at 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Sundays. It replays throughout the week, and it's available in the archive too. Sunday's show, I spent beating the hell out of Anthony Fauci, and that felt pretty good because I don't like that cat. I've never liked him. He always reminded me of some kind of little rat kind of guy standing up there on a soapbox behind that podium saying one thing, 2 hours later backtracking, trying to say he meant something else, and it could be construed as this. What this has to do with his masks and the various and usually draconian mask mandates throughout the nation. And, you know, just like that, now that the world's going to hell in a handbasket, foreign policy is in flames, nuclear war probably getting ready to break out somewhere in the Middle East at some point with somebody having one and saying, and, you know, we don't have, just like that, now we don't have to wear masks anymore. Ah, oh, son of a... Anyway, a couple weeks back, actually further than that, let's see here. Paul Fauci and masks. I think that's, let's go back to that. This would have been back, I think, in early April. And we've played it before. It was a go between, back and forth between Rand Paul and Dr. Anthony Fauci. How do I have that listed? That's for ducks. Paul Fauci masks. Well, it doesn't look to be there. So it's got to be somewhere else. We'll do this. Okay, here we go. And this was back in the days when Professor Clyde Crashcup was talking about, well, you know, if one mask is good, then obviously two masks would be better. Jeez. Anyway, so he got into it. Rand Paul, of course, an ophthalmic surgeon, you know, he's a physician himself, a practicing physician, which I don't know that Anthony Fauci ever was for, you know, an extended period of time. Listen to this. And it proves a greater point all along.
Dr. Fauci, in a recent British study, David Wiley and others found that no symptomatic reinfections from COVID-19 after following 2,800 patients for several months. In fact, there have been no reports of significant numbers of reinfections after acquiring COVID-19 naturally. Shane Crotty, a virologist at La Jolla Institute for Immunology, concludes from his experiments that the amount of immune memory gained from natural infection would likely prevent the vast majority of people from getting hospitalized disease, severe disease for many years. In this study, which was published in Science, Dr. Crotty showed that antibody levels stayed relatively constant with only modest declines over 6 to 8 months. Dr. Crotty reported that notably memory B cells specific for the spike protein or RBD were detected in almost all COVID-19 cases with no apparent half-life at 5 to 8 months after infection. In other words, Dr. Crotty found significant evidence of long-term immunity after COVID infection. Furthermore, Dr. Crotty noted B cell memory to some other infections has been observed for as long as 60 plus years after smallpox vaccination, or even 90 years after natural infection with influenza. That was a woman who got the Spanish flu, still showed immunity 90 years later. So rather than being pessimistic towards people gaining immunity after they've had COVID or had a vaccine, studies argue for significant optimism. In fact, there have been no scientific studies arguing or proving that infection with COVID does not create immunity. There have been no studies showing significant numbers of reinfections. Of the 30 million Americans who have had COVID, only a handful of reinfections have been discovered. In fact, the New York Times reported last fall more than 38 million people at the time worldwide had been infected with the coronavirus, and as of that date, fewer than 5 of these cases had been confirmed by scientists to be reinfections. Scientists interviewed for the article concluded, in most cases, a second bout with the virus produced milder symptoms or none at all. Given that no scientific studies have shown significant numbers of reinfections of patients previously infected or previously vaccinated, what specific studies do you cite to argue that the public should be wearing masks well into 2022?
I'm not sure I understand the connection of what
Listen
you're saying about
this cat
masks and reinfection. We're talking about people who have never been infected before.
You're
and
telling everybody to wear a
no,
mask whether they've had an infection or a vaccine. What I'm saying is they have immunity, and everybody agrees they have immunity. What studies do you have that people that have had the vaccine or have had the infection are spreading the infection? If we're not spreading the infection, isn't it just theater?
No, it's not.
You had the vaccine and you're wearing two masks. Isn't that theater?
No, that's not. Here we go again with the theater. Let's get down to the facts.
Because he's correct.
Okay, the studies that you quote from Crotty and Sette look at in vitro examination of memory immunity, which in
blah,
their
blah,
paper
blah,
they
blah,
specifically
blah.
Say this does not necessarily pertain to the actual protection. It's in vitro.
And what study can you point to that shows significant reinfection? There are no studies that show
Let me finish your question, if you please. The other thing is that when you talk about reinfection and you don't keep in the concept of variants, that's an entirely different ball game. That's a good reason for a mask. In the South African study conducted by J&J, they found that people
Johnson
who were infected with wild type and were exposed to the variant in South Africa, the 351, it was as if they had never been infected before. They had no protection. So when you talk about reinfection, you've got to make sure you're talking about wild type. I agree with you that you very likely would have protection from wild type
like
for at least 6 months. If
point
you're infected, but we in our country now have variants that are circulating.
Significant reinfection. What study shows significant reinfection, hospitalization, and death after either natural infection or the vaccine? It doesn't exist. There is no evidence that there are significant reinfections after vaccine. In fact, I don't think we have a hospitalization in the United States after the 2-week period after the second vaccination.
We don't
have a death in the United States.
You're not hearing what I'm saying about variants.
Yeah, we hear
We're
it.
Talking
just,
about wild type versus variants.
And what
now,
proof
rein-
is there, what proof is there that there are significant reinfections with hospitalizations and death from the variants? None in our country. Zero.
None.
Well, because
Still
we don't
none.
Have a prevalent of a variant yet. We're having one. Can I finish?
But I'm hoping
We're
soon.
Having 117 that's becoming
You're
more dominant.
You're making policy based on conjecture.
No,
you
it,
have the
it isn't based
that we're
on
going
conjecture.
To get variants, so you, some, you want people to wear a mask for another couple of years.
No.
You've been vaccinated, and you parade around in two masks for show.
No.
You can't get it again. There's almost virtually 0% chance you're going to get it, and yet you're telling people with that have had the vaccine who have immunity. You're defying everything we know about immunity by telling people to wear masks who have been vaccinated.
No.
Instead, you should be saying there is no science to say we're going to have a problem from the large number of people being vaccinated. You want to get rid of vaccine hesitancy? Tell them they quit wearing their mask after they get the vaccine. Okay. You want people to get the vaccine? Give them a reward instead of telling them that the nanny state's going to be there for 3 more years and you got to wear a mask forever. People don't want to hear it. There's no science behind it.
Well, let me just state for the record that masks are not theater. Masks are protective.
When you're wearing
and we have immunity, they're theater.
Yeah.
If you already have immunity, you're wearing a mask to give comfort to others.
Senator
you're not wearing a mask because
like
of any
Dr.
science.
Patrick,
I totally disagree with you.
Well, naturally you
Dr.
would.
Dr. Fauci, if you could respond so that we can understand the difference between the
virus
itself
done,
and the variants and the reason
that's
for a mask.
I'm sorry, ma'am, I can't.
If you could.
Vehemently denying that masks, in particular, his wearing of masks, was not theater. Let's fast forward. Now, this was April, late March, early April. Let's fast forward to Good Morning America, I think yesterday, or maybe today. Dr. Anthony Fauci talking with longtime Clinton political hack George Stephanopoulos.
Just bringing Dr. Anthony Fauci, President Biden's chief medical advisor. Dr. Fauci, thanks for joining us again this morning. Let's pick up where Stephanie just left off. What's your message to parents this morning whose kids are unvaccinated?
Well, the same as Stephanie just mentioned, and that is that the CDC recommendations still maintain that for children who are not vaccinated, obviously, most
children
are not 12 to 15 are getting vaccinated, that indoors they should still wear masks, and that's the CDC recommendation. Will that change as we get more and more information, as we get more and more people vaccinated? Certainly, we have to keep up with the evolving situation. George, we're not going to have
so I can
kids
make this shit up
at that
as we
age
go
vaccinated
along
for at least several months as we get towards the end of this year and the beginning of next year.
Okay, let's talk about the lifting of the mask mandates that we're seeing in many states, like here in New York. Other states are not ready to do that. Is the CDC basically saying whichever choice the state makes is fine?
Well, not really, George. If you look at it, the science that evolved over the last few weeks that prompted the CDC to make the recommendation that people who are vaccinated
should
feel safe
and, gas
and be able to
increased.
Go indoors and outdoors without wearing a mask relates to the evidence of how effective these vaccines are, not only in protecting you against infection, but even if you have a breakthrough infection, the chances of your transmitting it to someone else is extremely low, very low. The problem and the issue is that we don't have any way of knowing who is vaccinated and who's not vaccinated. And I think that's where the confusion arises, because there are some establishments
all
who
we
are
have
saying,
to do
well, I'm going
to
have people coming
registry,
into my establishment,
right,
my store, or what have you. Some are going to be vaccinated and some are not.
Sure.
I'm not going to know the difference. Some might be infected and might actually have a risk of infecting someone else. And under those circumstances, it's perfectly reasonable and understandable for the owner of that establishment to say, you know, we're going to keep the mask mandate up. And that's what we're seeing. And I think that's causing the confusion.
And they're
going to
go broke.
Because some are maintaining a mask
idiots.
Mandate and others are not.
How has it changed what you
the place
do when you wear
that.
A mask?
Excuse me, how does...
How has it changed what you do? How has it changed your mask wearing practices?
Listen.
Well, you know, George, I'm obviously careful because, I mean, I'm a physician and a healthcare provider. I am now much more comfortable in people seeing me indoors without a mask. I mean, before the CDC made the recommendation change, I didn't want to look like I was giving mixed signals. But being a fully vaccinated person, the chances of my getting infected in an indoor setting is extremely low. And that's the reason why in indoor settings now, I feel comfortable about not wearing a mask because I'm fully
I'm much more comfortable now in people seeing me indoors without a mask. I am much more comfortable now in people seeing me indoors without a mask. Before the CDC made that recommendation change, I didn't want to look like I was giving mixed signals. So it didn't matter whether the CDC was right. Fauci was towing the party line with this. And that proves all along that Rand Paul was right, that Fauci's mask wearing was nothing more than political optics. Now, when we take this, and this is as scathing and solid an indictment as anything that I can give you, and we add what I got coming up next, I think we're going to, where are we at? 8 o'clock. Yeah, we're going to have to go into extra innings. Hang on here a minute. Yeah, we swept. Okay, good. Our friend Claire Lopez told us a year ago plus about the origins of this virus, and lo and behold, she was spot on then. Everything that she said has been borne out, including the money. I think it was the NIH. Funded this research that created the China virus. Because it came from China. Rand Paul, once again, takes him apart. This was from last week. So the inference from this is, as director of the NIH, Dr. Anthony Fauci, using a go-between that they'll name in here, sends money, fungible funds, money, to the Wuhan Virological Institute of dangerously incompetent biologists. And he lies about it. Again. So let's go ahead and listen to this. This is what Paul Fauci redux. Or is that redo? Anyway, the other one that I had set up for you. And again, I'm not necessarily, I wouldn't call myself a fan of Rand Paul, but in this particular instance, actually in a number of instances, he's gotten these guys. And, you know, if you bother to watch, you can tell he's nailed them. And this is, or listen, as the case may be, you can tell. This was from last week. And what this is discussing the issue of the NIH money being funded to the Wuhan Virus Research Laboratory on something called gain of function research. Now, what that is, when you're dealing with a virus and you want to soup it up, that's the play. That's the description of what you're doing. A gain of function research is looking at how you can take this particular virus, which is already dangerous, or maybe not dangerous to humans, and modify it so that it does indeed become that and becomes, you know, a much more powerful, stronger virus. And this is what Rand Paul and Dr. Fauci went into it again. And this time again, like I said, we've seen that he lied about the masks, that it really truly was theater. This is what he has to say about the money.
Dr. Fauci, we don't know whether the pandemic started in a lab in Wuhan or evolved naturally, but we should want to know.
Yeah,
3 million people have died from this pandemic, and that should cause us to explore all possibilities. Instead, government authorities, self-interested in continuing gain-of-function research, say there's nothing to see here. Gain-of-function research, as you know, is juicing up naturally occurring animal viruses to infect humans. To arrive at the truth, the U.S. government should admit that the Wuhan Virology Institute was experimenting to enhance the coronavirus's ability to infect humans. Juicing up super viruses is not new. Scientists in the U.S. have long known how to mutate animal viruses to infect humans. For years, Dr. Ralph Barrick, a virologist in the U.S., has been collaborating with Dr. Shi Zhengli of the Wuhan Virology Institute, sharing his discoveries about how to create superviruses. This gain-of-function research has been funded by the NIH. The collaboration between the U.S. and the Wuhan Virology Institute continues. Doctors Barrick and Shi worked together to insert bat virus spike protein into the backbone of the deadly SARS virus and then use this man-made supervirus to infect human airway cells. Think about that for a moment. The SARS virus had a 15% mortality. We're fighting a pandemic that has about a 1% mortality. Can you imagine if a SARS virus that's been juiced up and had viral proteins added to it, to the spike protein, if that were released accidentally? Dr. Fauci, do you still support funding of the NIH funding of the lab in Wuhan?
Senator Paul, with all due respect, you are entirely and completely incorrect that the NIH has not ever and does not now fund gain-of-function research in the Wuhan Institute.
Do they fund Dr. Barrick?
We do not fund.
Do you fund Dr. Barrick's gain-of-function research?
Dr. Barrick does not doing gain-of-function research, and if it is, it's according to the guidelines, and it is being conducted in North Carolina.
You don't think inserting a bat virus spike protein that he got from the Wuhan Institute into the SARS virus is gain of function?
That is
not. You would
not
be in the minority because at least 200 scientists have signed a statement from the Cambridge Working Group saying that it is gain of function.
Well, it is not. And if you look at the grant and you look at the progress reports, it is not gain of function, despite the fact that people tweet that.
So
they
do
write
you
about
still support
it?
Sending money to the Wuhan Virology Institute?
We do not send money now to the Wuhan Virology Institute.
Do you support sending money? We did, under your tutelage. We were sending it through EcoHealth. It was a sub-agency and a sub-grant. Do you support the money from NIH that was going to the Wuhan Institute?
Let me explain to you why that was done. The SARS-CoV-1 originated in bats in China. It would have been irresponsible of us if we did not investigate the bat viruses and the serology to see who might have been infected.
Or perhaps it would be irresponsible to send it to the Chinese government that we may not be able to trust with this knowledge and with this incredibly dangerous viruses. Government scientists like yourself who favor gain-of-function research.
I don't favor gain-of-function research in China. You are saying
naturally
things that are not correct.
Government defenders of gain-of-function, such as yourself, say that COVID-19 mutations were random and not designed by man. But interestingly, the technique that Dr. Barrick developed forces mutations by serial passage through cell culture that the mutations appear to be natural. In fact, Dr. Barrick named the technique the no-see-um technique because the mutations appear naturally. Nicholas Baker in the New York Magazine said nobody would know if the virus had been fabricated in a laboratory or grown in nature. Government authorities in the U.S., including yourself, unequivocally deny that COVID-19 could have escaped a lab. But even Dr. Xi in Wuhan wasn't so sure. According to Nicholas Baker, Dr. Xi wondered, could this new virus have come from her own laboratory? She checked her records frantically and found no matches. That really took a load off my mind, she said. I had not slept for days. The director of the gain-of-function research in Wuhan couldn't sleep because she was terrified that it might be in her lab. Dr. Barrick, an advocate of gain-of-function research, admits, the main problem that the Institute of Virology has is the outbreak occurred in close proximity. What are the odds? Barrick responded, could you rule out a laboratory escape? The answer in this case is probably not. Will you, in front of this group, categorically say that the COVID-19 could not have occurred through serial passage in a laboratory?
I do not have any accounting of what the Chinese may have done, and I'm fully in favor of any further investigation of what went on in China. However, I will repeat again, the NIH and NIAID categorically has not funded gain-of-function research to be conducted in the Wuhan Institute of Virology.
You do support it in the U.S. We have 11 labs doing it, and you have allowed it here. We have a committee to do it, but the committee has granted every exemption. You're fooling with Mother Nature here. You're allowing super viruses to be created with a 15% mortality. It's very dangerous. I think it was a huge mistake to share this with China, and it's a huge mistake to allow this to continue in the United States. And we should be very careful to investigate where this virus came from.
I fully agree that you should investigate where the virus came from. But again, we have not funded gain-of-function research on this virus in the Wuhan Institute of Virology, no matter how many times
there was research done with Dr. Xi and Dr. Barrick. They have collaborated on gain-of-function research where they enhanced the SARS virus to infect human airway cells, and they did it by merging.
Matt Boyle, who is he's a reporter with Breitbart, has already talked about the NIH awarding a taxpayer-funded, that's me and you, a taxpayer-funded grant to Echo Health Alliance that was entitled Understanding the Risk of Bat Coronavirus Emergency. And one of the subrecipients of the grant's funds was the Wuhan Institute of Virology. The Daily Mail says, that's a UK paper, says that the Chinese laboratory, the center of scrutiny over a potential coronavirus leak, has been using U.S. government money to carry out research on bats from caves, which the scientists believe are the original source of the outbreak. $3.7 million. $3.7 million of our money given to our enemies to weaponize a virus to use against us. Tony Fauci. Tell me that I'm wrong. $3.7 million of my money and yours, our money sent to our enemies in order that they can conduct research to weaponize a virus to use against us. You don't think that Dr. Fauci knew where this money was going? Of course he did. You do you not think that Dr. Fauci knew what this money was going to be used for? Of course he did. Knowing those two things, it is simple. A simple leap. Actually, it's more like a casual stride. To the next conclusion is that he understood that this was to be weaponized against us, and he was cool with it. He knew. Do you understand? He knew. We don't want to think that. We don't want to think that this guy's a traitor. He's a criminal. What other conclusion can you come to? Yeah, exactly. This is Dr. Robert Barrick. Tell me in what way he's different from Dr. Fauci in this. Trusting naive middleman who didn't fully understand his role in transferring the money from Dr. Fauci and the NIH to the WIV, he knew. He helped. He got some of the money. So he understood the two things that Dr. Fauci understood. Therefore, he didn't care either. He was cool with it, too. Yeah, take a minute, man. It's cool. Go ahead. I need to get a drink and pull up the next clip. What other conclusion can you come to, guys? What other conclusion can you come to? And how can we not? And think about this little rat bastard. He's been on TV every day since this thing started. Tell us one thing. Tell us another. And every, you know, whatever direction he went, the media and about two-thirds of the country went, right with him. Tucker Carlson has a pretty compelling list of particulars in this from Thursday, I think. If you haven't heard it, again, you know how I am about clips. And I'd rather use those. You know the story. You know the philosophy. It's a little bit long. I apologize for that, but it is compelling.
In a masked world, human beings never really touch each other. Is that public health? No, it's not public health. It's a kind of punishment. Tony Fauci is punishing the country, you, us, everyone. The question is, why is he doing that? Maybe he likes it. That's possible. But you've got to think that at least part of Tony Fauci's authoritarian germ hysteria is a cover for something else. Could it be that Tony Fauci is trying to divert attention from himself and his own personal role in the COVID-19 pandemic? Now, what do we mean by that? We cannot recommend more strongly a new piece by Nicholas Waite, who for more than 50 years has been one of the preeminent science writers in the world. For 30 years, Nicholas Waite worked for the New York Times. He edited the science section there. But this piece did not run in the New York Times. It ran on Medium. And the piece explains where this virus almost certainly came from. In it, Nicholas Waite makes it clear that more than any other single living American, Tony Fauci is responsible for the COVID-19 pandemic. Waite lays out a nearly insurmountably large amount of evidence that this virus originated at the Wuhan Institute of Virology in central China. It seemed to make sense this show and others had raised the possibility from the early days of the pandemic. But this piece all but proves it. At the time the outbreak began last fall, the Wuhan lab was conducting experiments on how to make bat viruses infectious to human beings. Those experiments were funded by American tax dollars. Those experiments were, their funding, approved and directed by Tony Fauci in Washington. By Tony Fauci. That is hard to believe, but it's true, and the piece lays it out. Many of the Wuhan experiments fell under the direction of a Chinese researcher called Shi Zhengli, known as the Bat Lady. She was China's leading expert on bat-borne viruses. Her job was to genetically engineer coronaviruses so that they infect human beings and do so as easily as possible. This work, Nicholas Waite notes, involved, quote, doing gain-of-function experiments designed to make coronavirus infect human cells. Now, why was this research going on? We'll have to ask the scientists who did it. But the fact remains, these were some of the most dangerous experiments ever conducted by mankind. And yet we know that China was not taking necessary safety precautions, and we should not be surprised by that. Several years ago, American diplomatic cables warned about low and lax standards at the Wuhan lab. In fact, the Wuhan facility was classified as a biosafety level 2 laboratory. What does that mean? Well, according to Richard Ebright, who's a molecular biologist at Rutgers, that is approximately the same level of safety that you would find in a dentist's office in America. So that lab conducting research, experiments on the coronavirus and how to make it transmissible to human beings resulted almost certainly in the infection of a lab researcher, and the virus spread from there. The first coronavirus patients, in fact, did not come from the so-called wet market, as we heard. That was a lie. The first patients of the coronavirus, in fact, were employees at the Wuhan Institute of Virology, at the lab. So once again, why would the Wuhan lab be conducting experiments like that in the first place? Well, we know that Tony Fauci had authorized payment for the research. For 5 years, from 2014 to 2019, the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, which Tony Fauci runs and has for decades, pumped money to a group called the EcoHealth Alliance. The EcoHealth Alliance is run by a man whose name you may recognize, Dr. Peter Daszak. Daszak contracted with Dr. Xi to conduct gain-of-function experiments at the Wuhan lab. Just before the pandemic became public knowledge, on December 9, 2019, Peter Daszak sat for an interview that was streamed online. In that interview, Daszak bragged about how easy it is to manipulate coronaviruses in lab experiments.
Coronaviruses are pretty good. I mean, you're a virologist, you know all this stuff, but you can manipulate them in the lab pretty easily. There's just spike protein drives a lot of what happens with the coronavirus, zoonotic risk. So you can get the sequence, you can build the protein, and we work with Ralph Barrick at UNC to do this. Insert it into the backbone of another virus and do some work in the lab.
So just days after that was shot, it became clear that this new version of coronavirus, this novel coronavirus, what we now call COVID-19, was running rampant through Wuhan, then China, and then the world. Since then, since the pandemic began, Peter Daszak, not surprisingly, has appeared on virtually every media platform available to him to deny in the most strenuous and dismissive terms that the Wuhan lab could be in any way linked to the outbreak, since, of course, he has very personal motives for claiming that. Quote, "The idea that this virus escaped from a lab is just pure baloney," he said last year. But that was a lie. It's not pure baloney. And a lot of smart people knew that right away. One of those people is Alina Chan, a molecular biologist at the Broad Institute at Harvard and MIT. She bravely wrote a paper about how the coronavirus's genome hadn't changed much over time, and that was odd, because that genome had gone through trillions of replications. According to Chan, that fact implied that the virus was designed for human-to-human transmission from the outset. The former director of the CDC also clearly understood this, and he too argued that the virus came from the Wuhan lab.
I am of the point of view that I still think the most likely etiology of this pathogen in Wuhan was from a laboratory, escaped. Other people don't believe that. That's fine. Science will eventually figure it out. It's not unusual for respiratory pathogens that are being worked on in a laboratory to infect a laboratory worker.
Millions of people have died of COVID-19. So it's not a matter of score settling or blame assignment to figure out where it came from. If you want to prevent the next global pandemic, you have to figure out how this one started. And so the World Health Organization said it would get to the bottom of it. The World Health Organization, of course, is beholden to China. And so it tried to hide the basic facts of the origins of this pandemic. And to hide those facts, WHO appointed none other than Peter Daszak as the only America-based representative on the investigative team looking into where the virus came from. In what turned out to be a sham report, that team concluded that it's, quote, extremely unlikely that the virus came from the Wuhan lab. Again, that's not true. The WHO's investigation into the origins of the virus was fraudulent, and that matters to public health globally. But one thing you'll notice is that Tony Fauci did not say that. Why? Because once again, he is implicated in it personally. The gain-of-function research that Peter Daszak was bragging about in the video we just showed you had, in fact, been banned explicitly by the U.S. government. There was a federal moratorium on the funding of exactly the kind of gain-of-function experiments that went on in the Wuhan lab to disastrous effects. So why didn't the U.S. government halt its funding of the lab in Wuhan? That is a central question, and Nicholas Wade, to his great credit, looked into it. And here's what he found. Quote, someone wrote a loophole into the moratorium. The moratorium specifically barred funding of any gain-of-function research that increased the pathogenicity of the flu, MERS, or SARS viruses. But then a footnote on page 2 of the moratorium document states that, quote, an exception from the research pause may be obtained if the head of the U.S. government funding agency determines that the research is urgently necessary to protect the public health or national security. And that's exactly the loophole that was exploited. Who signed off on this? Tony Fauci, possibly along with Francis Collins, the director of the NIH, invoked that special exemption in order to keep funding the Wuhan lab and the deadly experiments that were going on there, the experiments that clearly went so wrong. According to Richard Ebright, quote, unfortunately, the NIAID director, that'd be Fauci, and the NIH director exploited this loophole to issue exemptions to projects subject to pause, preposterously asserting that the exempted research was, quote, urgently necessary to protect public health or national security, and thereby nullifying the pause. This wouldn't have happened if Tony Fauci didn't allow it to happen. That is clear.
Mm-hmm.
It's an amazing story. It is a shocking story. In a functional country, there would be a criminal investigation currently underway into Tony Fauci's role in the COVID pandemic that has killed millions and halted our country and changed it forever. So why isn't there a criminal investigation into Tony Fauci's role in this pandemic?
I don't know. There ought to be. I've read the article that Tucker's based on. I'll give it, but you don't have to. I mean, look, we all put it together right here. He lied about masks and the efficacy of masks. We have found that he has lied about U.S. taxpayer money being used to research this thing and to weaponize it, to develop it. He knew, okay? He knew. as to his motivations for what he did and why he did it, who the hell knows? But the point is, he knew. Who cares about his motivations? He knew. And he allowed this to happen. But so what? Big deal. What's going to happen to Tony Fauci? The same thing that happened to Hillary Clinton is going to happen to Tony Fauci. Same thing that happened to Hunter Biden is going to happen to Tony Fauci. The same thing that happened to Alexander Vindman or Jim Comey or Andrew McCabe or John Brennan. By the way, John Brennan, did you know that in 1976, John Brennan voted for the Communist Party USA's presidential candidate, Slobber and Gus Hall, and then later became director of the CIA? Again, I ask you, and it is rhetorically so, how the hell does a communist sympathizer become head of the CIA? Or FBI, for that matter, because Comey did the same thing. Rock the Red's coming up in a couple of weeks, and I am looking forward to sitting down with friend Trevor Loudon and talk about this. As most of you know, and I've talked about him several times here, and you've heard him on Gary's program, I'm sure. Trevor Loudon is probably America's foremost expert on the history and the depth and the breadth of communist infiltration into the quarters of power in the United States. And it is vast, America. Hydra. Do yourself a favor. I don't care if you like superhero movies or not. Captain America, the Winter Soldier. Watch it. And instead of imagining that Hydra is some Nazi-based tyrannical organization, just pretend as Democrats, they operate the same damn way. And we're going to talk about that, and I'm going to see if I can't prevail upon him to come on the show, too. He's a terrific guy, and like I said, there's nobody knows this stuff better. He's the Michael Cutler of of communist infiltration in American government, basically. So nothing's going to happen to him. Again, he may receive a pretty severe conviction in the court of public opinion, but is he going to go to jail? Nah, hell, he's never going to even see the inside of a courtroom any more than Hillary Clinton will, or Hunter Biden, or Joe Biden, for that matter, or Elizabeth Chao, or Mitch McConnell, Dianne Feinstein. It doesn't matter who you say. Right, left, two wings on the same pterodactyl. Not dead air. I'm still here just thinking about all this mess. And, you know, I got to admit, I know I have a tendency to be a bit grim about these things and pessimistic, but that's really not true. I may appear that way. And, you know, I talk about this stuff and it makes me mad. It makes me tired. It doesn't seem to change. And I've been doing this for a while now. What year is it? 21. So eight or nine years. I'll tell you when it was. It was at the beginning of Barack Obama's second term, whenever that was, 2012, 9 years. Yeah. Yeah, it was like a couple of weeks. It was Thanksgiving weekend, as a matter of fact, is when it was. That was the very first episode of A Conservative Perspective, a 30-minute stuttering festival. No, it wasn't that bad. It wasn't that bad, but I'll be damned if I know where it is, and that's probably a good thing. Some backwater Eddie Flotsam and Jetsam collection system of the internet. But anyway, so I've been doing it for a while, and all this stuff, you know, all the scandals that happened during the Barack Obama administration and all the bad actors that were pointed out. What happened? Exactly. All the things that came to light about these people during Donald Trump's administration, Hillary Clinton and James Comey and John Brent. By the way, John Brent, never mind. But you get the idea, nothing ever happens. And when you really care about the country, as so many of us do, I know we really do it. And yeah, it sounds kind of corny, I guess, but so what? It is what it is. And, you know, that's patriotism. You love the country. You don't want to see what's happening here. You know what's wrong. Innately, intuitively, you know what's going on is not right. It doesn't resonate, and it shouldn't, because you're correct. Your instincts are right. It's wrong, everything that's happening. And while the situation is impossible, it is not hopeless. And we've always got to be mindful of that. It lay within us. If we're going to change it, we're going to do it. If it's going to change, we're going to do it. If there's going to be pushback, we're going to be pushing. I'm not talking about advocating physical violence at all. However, that being said, we must be mindful of the fact that these people have every intention of visiting violence upon us. Violence to them, to Antifa, to Black Lives Matter, to all those cats over there on the left. Violence is a very viable and effective form of political theater. It's terrorism. And they're right. It works pretty well. Until at some point a level of critical mass is reached I was talking on Gary Benford's program last night. He was kind enough to let me come on for a few minutes and talk about some really cool things that are going to be happening in a couple of weeks at Rock the Red in Greenville, South Carolina. As most of you know, I have been a Civil War reenactor for 25, 26 years, a long time. And having immersed myself in that history, in that psychology of the events leading up to the Civil War, the war itself and the post-war era that took place in that 20 years after Lincoln's assassination. And even, you know, as to how it shapes us to this very day. From a technological standpoint in terms of weaponry, I won't say that it was primitive, but it was certainly less sophisticated than what people go to war with today in terms of rifles, in terms of infantry and artillery. But it was total. And by that, I mean total warfare was engaged in. Warfare on the battlefield, warfare against the citizenry, warfare politically, Nothing was left untouched in the United States where the Civil War visited. And the majority of the South, yeah, but go to Gettysburg. Go to the cemetery. Go to Devil's Den. Walk Pickett's Charge and take a look at the photographs. Same thing with Antietam. Shiloh, Chancellorsville, Price's Crossroads, Vicksburg, and a dozen other places. There was nothing left, is what I'm trying to get at. There was nothing left. There wasn't any corn. There weren't any cattle. There weren't any horses. There weren't any chickens. There wasn't any fences. There weren't any houses. There weren't any churches. There weren't any railroads. It was laid waste. And the motivation's ideologically a little bit different should, God forbid, something like that happen now. But we're not looking at the motivations or the internal or external factors that may bring about a second civil war. What I'm trying to tell you is we need to look at the devastation. Go back through your history books. Look at Charleston, South Carolina. Look at Savannah. Look at Atlanta. Look at Vicksburg. Look at Gettysburg. It's a terrible, terrible thing. As a matter of fact, Robert E. Lee said, "It is a good thing that war is so terrible, lest we would grow too fond of it." And he's right. Now I've brought you cats really down, haven't I? Well, take heart. It can be frustrating. It can be discouraging. But you know what? There are so many more of us who make a conscious effort every day, even if it's just a little bit, in some small way, to accentuate the positive. Just like being said, that's what's going to turn the tide. It's going to be people, and again, like I said, it lay within us. And we can do it. We have to, really. Well, maybe going into extra innings was a little premature. I think I'm about out of gas. We've covered everything that I've wanted to talk about tonight, and that's rare, but especially when it happens early, but that's okay too. So we're going to go ahead and sign off tonight. Thursday we'll be back probably 7 p.m., 7 to 8 Eastern Standard Time with Patriot Nation Radio. Of course, at 8 o'clock, Mark Hoffman and Patriot Nation Radio Live will be picking up and taking the reins till 9. Thank you so much for the opportunity to get to talk about what's going on, stuff in general. I really appreciate the time that you allow me. Thank you very much for listening. Newcomers, welcome. And I guess that's about it. We'll be here on Thursday taking a look at things as we do through a conservative's perspective. In the meantime, God bless you. God bless America. We'll see you then.